Welcome back to Mom, We Can't Pause, a video game podcast in which I talk to people about their favorite video games. And this week, I have another special guest for you. Her name is Willa Rowe. You may know her from Kotaku, formerly of Kotaku, unfortunately. But she's better than that place. Willa, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty great, all things considered. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. It's funny, we're talking about... What are we talking about today? What game did you want to bring to the table today?
Yeah, so when I was like thinking about what would be my favorite game to talk about, there's like a lot of games that run through my head of like special games or games that I feel like I'm kind of known for talking about. But at the end of the day, I was like, it's not going to be any of those. It's not going to be like Nier or Drakengard. It's not going to be Persona. It's going to be Journey, that game company's 2012 title Journey.
Are the developers really just called that game company?
Yes, they are.
Okay. I like that for a lot of different reasons. It's very straightforward. So here's the thing about Journey. This is like one of those instances where I've played this game for a little bit at the worst possible time in my life.
Okay.
Not because it was like a sadness or anything. It's more just like, I was 19 when that game came out, and I can just straight up say I wasn't ready for it. I can straight up just say, like, hey, this was not for me at the time. I don't get it. I don't know what's happening here. I might have been dumb, quite frankly. So,
maybe.
So, what is the deal with Journey?
Yeah, it's such a weird game to explain or to talk about, because it's like, it's pretty simple, which makes it weird to discuss, because it's like people are like, oh, that's it? And I'm like, no, you don't get it. It's genius. Journey is this short game that really only takes like, you know, like 3 hours to complete, I feel like. And it's about you're this little figure in a robe, and you start in a desert, and off in the distance you see a mountain, and the game is about walking to the mountain. And that's it. Pretty much. That's it. That's like the short version of what Journey is.
So it's, you know, there's a very popular like term to describe games like this these days. And it's kind of a negative term. Walking simulator. I'm sure you've heard the term before.
Of course.
Is this like the where the term kind of comes from?
Oh, like, I mean, no. I think the term mostly comes from games like Dear Esther, which were also in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is pretty walking simulator-esque in a way, just because it's mostly just about moving forward. But then again, like once you get into the game, there's a surprising level of like movement mechanics almost, and there's a multiplayer element, which is obviously kind of like the big thing about this game that I'm sure I'll spend a lot of time talking about. So it's not quite walking simulator, I think, in the way people used it or still use it, which is like, I feel like would be like a single player narrative focused game. But it definitely has walking simulator elements.
Hmm. See, I didn't even know there was multiplayer in this game until you said that.
What?
So, yeah,
whoa,
that's
like the big thing that I love.
I really only played it for maybe half an hour. I only played it the one time on PS3, like years ago. I don't remember much about it besides the sand of the desert and the cloaked figure, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been reminded of it over the years because people have talked about Journey, and I mean, I played Astrobot, and there's the Journey figure Astrobot in the game. So it's like, oh yeah, that was a game once. Yeah, Journey. But
yeah,
I don't even know much about it besides that.
Yeah. So the big thing about it, and I don't know if you'll know that people have talked about this before then, is when you're like doing the journey and you're walking along through the levels, every once in a while, you'll encounter other robed figures during your playthrough. And all of these are other actual players who are currently playing the game. And it becomes like a multiplayer experience where you can kind of like help people along, guide them to where they need to go, and sort of like help each other. Because one of the things you do in the game is you have this kind of almost flying mechanic where you can like levitate and fly for short bursts of time. And if you're closer to another player, you're like the ability to fly recharges faster. But the whole twist of it was that you can't like communicate in any way that any multiplayer game at the time did. Like this was 2012. This was like height of like online play, like Xbox Live, Call of Duty, Halo, all of that was like so in vogue. And Journey was like, it's multiplayer. You might not even know that though, because it doesn't like tell you that these figures have usernames or anything. And you can't like chat with them. There's no like messaging system. Like you can't say, oh, hey, where do I go? You can just hold a button that lets you chirp and make a little chirping sound. So you just have to chirp and like move in ways that communicate to the other player like where to go and what to do.
How did I not know about this? I have no idea. Like, I've never heard about this at all when it comes to Journey. Yeah, all I knew,
it's the main thing. It's like, oh, it's the thing I'll spend so much time talking about for the next however long I'm here.
Please, by all means. So I'm guessing you played this around the time it came out or close to it.
Yeah. So I played this when it released because it's actually like this is a game that's so weirdly linked to like my career path as a games critic, because I had been getting into like reading about games, mostly through like IGN and, you know, Podcast Beyond, which at the time this was like when it was like Greg Miller. And, you know, they posted their review of Journey and they had been talking about it on the pod. And I was like, this game sounds really interesting. It's a little different than what I play, but I'm very into what they're talking about. This kind of like, you know, weird, meditative, small game. And so I downloaded it. And I remember I played it in one sitting. I like got home from school one day and I played it in one sitting. And I was actually, I had like swim practice because I was on the swim team. I had it that evening and I was late because I was finishing Journey.
Oh my.
And then like Journey was a kind of like playing this game and then replaying it, which I've played this game so many times, like probably more times than I've played any other game. And it like unlocked something in my head where I was like, wow, games are something else. Like there's something about games that are really interesting. And then it like really drove me down the path to be like, what if I wrote about them? So yeah.
So you could say in a way Journey changed your life in that aspect at least.
I think absolutely, yeah.
I think there's something very cool about that. It kind of ties into the ever going debate that of whether or not video games are art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say I do vaguely remember Journey being a linchpin of that argument, at least back then. Like, I didn't read too many of those arguments, but I do remember seeing it and seeing people talk about Journey in such a way. Am I off base when I say that?
No, I think you're completely on base. Like, it was definitely like a game that people read as, you know, all like capital A art. At a time when I think, like, you know, this wasn't Gamergate yet, but this was still in that early 2010s era where gaming had, like, a pretty, you know, codified identity of Halo, Call of Duty, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so people didn't really take it too seriously, despite there being good work of people trying to write about it in that way. And then Journey came out, and it was kind of like this very clear statement of, like, wow, this the only thing this feels like is some kind of art piece. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think the visual style of this game is like so striking. Like every scene in this game feels like it's a painting. the score is really phenomenal. From Austin Wintory, it's still, in like my mind, one of the best scores ever made for a game. And then just like the central clear theme and message, which, you know, from that game company and then the game's director, Genova Chan, of being like, you know, this is a game about connection and how we connect as humans. And I think it was a really powerful statement about like what games could be and what online gaming could be at a time when people kind of only identified online gaming as the place you go if you want to like kill people in Call of Duty and get harassed.
Yeah, definitely.
And that kind of like this erased that. Like there's this old Eurogamer interview with Genova Chan where he's talking about like how this game kind of breaks down the assumptions that people have about video games and the people who play them, where he's like, quote, you think that they will be an asshole. But he goes on to say, none of us are born to be an asshole. I believe that very often it's not really the player that's an asshole. It's the game designer that made them an asshole, which is a sentiment that I love so much because it's like, yeah, game design forces you to just do these things and they can be fun, but it's like it doesn't make you a cool person necessarily to like run around Call of Duty and you're all just being so like jacked up on killing people. And and Genova Chen was like, you know, what if we made a game where the central idea was just like encouraging cooperation amongst players in a really unique way that only games can do?
I think there's something to that. Definitely there's something to that because, you know, even to this day, there's still kind of an air of mass, like, well, I think it's a straight up like toxic masculinity in games that perpetuates like you said, like the jacked up feeling of killing somebody in Call of Duty. I think that's still there in like a lot of AAA games, at least, because it's kind of like mass market appeal. There's still something to like get like being drawn towards that feeling of just basically hurting somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And not, and while there are not few games that are, you know, I'm kind of struggling here because it's kind of, it's hard to talk about the game when you haven't played it, you know, but, you know, in the last couple years, there have been more turns towards like so-called cozy games, for instance, you know, like your Stardew Valleys, games like A Little to the Left, where there is no goal of hurting somebody, but, you know, just achieving a simple goal, you know, farming or cleaning up, whatever, however you want to put it.
Yeah, I think it's like really interesting because, you know, as you kind of said, like the mass market appeal kind of thing is for like action games, shooter games. So it creates this perception that like gaming is just about being violent, which has like never been true. Like there have always been games that aren't that way.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of this like public perception that that's the like average game. And, you know, Journey was definitely one of those moments where it was kind of like there can be other things and we can like make gaming something else and it can have like a real impact on the players to like try to do like try to learn a lesson and like go out into the world and maybe change and be better.
I think there's definitely something to that because, again, I mean, you said that the mass market appeal is kind of, you know, violent centric, and people have that idea that, you know, the average gamer has like a violent fantasy that they want to live out, you know? And it doesn't help that the most popular games in the world are violent video games inherently.
Yeah.
But I think there something could be said. And I could be talking about my ass again. I have to stress that because, like I said, I haven't played the game. But there could be something to a game like Journey, ever so slightly changing games to make them more, not even necessarily art pieces, but change what you can do in a game or change what a game can do for you, for lack of a better term. Because, like, even in, like, violent video games, like, even role-playing games, whatever, there have been quests, moments of just reflection, quietness, things that will make you think as a player rather than just, like, getting to the next objective. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the great things Journey did and encouraged other games to do, even games that aren't, like, traditionally cozy or more laid back. Like, I think there are plenty of moments in traditionally violent games that have even tried to learn from this or do things differently. I don't know. It's really interesting. I also think Journey is just a game that, like, for a game that came out 12 years ago, I feel like it's only become more relevant as, like, something to look to. Not so that every game can be it, but that, you know, the industry and developers and players can be like, this doesn't, you know, there can be other ways. Like, we don't have to just accept that, like, games have to be one thing. And it doesn't have to cater to, like, one type of audience.
I think you're right about that, especially. And it's funny that you said that it still resonates, because I was just looking it up, and I knew that Journey had gotten ported to the PS4. I didn't realize it got ported to Windows and iOS, though.
Yes, it did. I remember one of the funniest experiences I've had with this game is, like, after... So, you know, I played it in 2012, and I must have played... Like, no exaggeration, I think I played Journey from start to finish, like, 50 times. Because I kept going back, because there's the whole idea that you can, like, you know, you grow as you play this game, and you start as someone who knows nothing, and you're being helped along by other players. And then the more you play, the more you, like, turn into that mentor for newcomers. And it's this, like, really interesting... kind of reward system, like, separated from obviously, like, level or XP, but it's just, like, rewarding to be able to guide someone through this adventure. So I played it so much when it came out, and then I didn't touch it for, like, a decade, and then it came out on PC, and I remember I bought it on PC, and I made my girlfriend play it, and she was so, she, like, really liked it at the time. But the thing that I remember is she was playing it. She was having a fun time, like, interacting with the other robed figures. And then at the end of the game, like, one of this, like, this big reveal that they do is as the credits roll, it shows you the usernames of all the people you played with. And oh. She was like, she was shocked. She was like, I had no idea these were real people.
See, I had no idea about, like you blew my mind twice. So far.
Much like the game does. That's kind of the experience.
Oh my god.
It's wild because and like I had this experience back on PlayStation, and then this happened when my girlfriend at the time, now fiance, when she played it, is like you roll credits, you see these usernames, and then inevitably you'll get a message or you'll send a message to that player. And you have, like, a conversation with them. Like, you know, my fiance had this whole conversation with this person that she spent the whole time playing Journey with, just being like, wow, wasn't that such a unique game? That was such a cool experience. Like, oh, thanks for helping me. Oh, this is my first time playing or whatever. And it's like, it really is effective at doing that thing that, you know, that game company and Genova Chan wanted of, like, it breaks down any barrier you might expect, and it, like, takes away any preconceived notions of who a gamer is or who you're playing with. And it's just like, this is just another person that you just had, like, a pretty emotional experience with, and if you want to, you can just talk about it.
See, that's fascinating, because when you first told me about the multiplayer aspect, I didn't expect, you know, that you'd be able to reach out to anybody afterwards. I didn't think it would tell you usernames or anything. I thought you would just, you know, have the multiplayer experience and, oh, we're going to keep it anonymous. and just keep moving.
I know, it's an interesting choice, and I've thought a bit about like why they chose that. Like, you could easily make it anonymous forever and just be like, you know, anybody out there could have been that person. And that kind of like does make the theme effective.
Yeah.
But there's something I like about revealing it at the end. And, you know, through like Steam or the PlayStation Store, or, you know, just the PlayStation Network, you could just message someone. It's like, wow, like you could actually like build relationships out of this game, which is very interesting. Like, it's an interesting, you know, evolution of this game's idea of like, this game can change you or the people around you, that I really like.
I think that's something that the medium really needs, you know?
Yeah.
It's connections.
I absolutely agree. It's like, it's wild to me that, you know, looking back on this game, it's a game that definitely like changed my life and made me want to be more involved in like the industry of games and like writing about games. And it still is like kind of a pillar of how I think about games and what they can be. And yet at the same time, I feel like at times we haven't learned enough lessons from Journey. Like, more people could be doing this. I think the game that like one of the games that's gotten closest, and it's a game that is like very traditionally action, but then it melds this kind of idea of games can be a force for change in the real world, is Nier Automata, with its like final ending and conclusion and like thesis about what it's trying to say. I think it pulls a lot on the same ideas of connection that Journey has.
You know, it's funny. I knew, for some reason, I just knew you were going to mention Nier Automata right there. I can't tell you why, because that's another game I haven't... I played a little bit of Nier Automata. I fully intend to go back to it. I'm just lazy, quite frankly. There's a lot of games. But I've heard the same thing about how it kind of flips the action on its head, and it's not just about the action, but about the story, and it's a very in-depth story. That's on base, right?
Yeah, definitely. That is absolutely on base. And there's very clearly a conversation happening between these two games, and I do really, really like that. And it's like, at this point, it's wild, because I'm like, wow, Nier Automata was 2017, and now I'm like, so 7 years after that, like, man, I'm trying to like rack my brain and think, do I think more games have taken the lessons from this kind of idea? And I'm like, I don't know if enough big games have.
It's really hard to say, especially like the big games, because those, it's hard to have a message like that in something that's so mass marketed.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think you're right.
Because, you know, there's no direct parallel between, like, gaming and movies. But like, my brain wants to say that the AAA game is similar to, like, the blockbuster movie. But I don't think that's, like, a fair one-to-one comparison. What do you think?
I think that's a pretty fair comparison, like, by and large. I think the AAA game is very blockbuster. I think even more than that, it's like very explicitly closest to like the MCU or Disney-owned Star Wars, where a lot of developers at like big AAA companies, if they're like owned by like EA or Ubisoft or that type of thing, it's very much like, what is the product we can make that will get the most people to buy it so that we can maximize profit? Like, it doesn't, sure, it can be fun, but it's not really about much more than, at the end of the day, kind of making a profit. And I mean, I'm very like, I've always been really hard on the AAA industry, because I see a lot of, you know, bullshit like this in it. But it's like, at the end of the day, AAA is very much about like, it's so homogenized because they want to make a single product that takes 8 years and costs like $1 bajillion, and it has to make them like $100 bajillion so that they can have their profit margins. It's like, in an industry like that, there's not much room for actually like taking risk or making artistic statements that most people that like that some people will actually find something interesting in.
It's funny because I pretty much agree with that. The only thing I would say is that there are, I mean, this is kind of more towards your point, though. There are moments of, you know, deeper statements, levity, however you want to put it, in games in the AAA space that kind of push them more towards like, oh, they're trying to say something interesting at this particular juncture, at this particular mission in the game. Or they're trying to touch on something deeper than just press square to punch the enemy. And I like when games do things like that, but like you said, it's kind of rare to find that in a AAA game, you know?
Yeah, it is. I think it's about like, you know, the way the AAA space is now, it is that thing of like developers can still sneak it in moments, which I think they do a good job of at times, but it's like, overall, it's just so hard, which is a little frustrating because I think there's so much potential still that like games haven't reached.
I think it's fair to call it even more than just a little bit frustrating, though, because there are so many games that come out every year, and every now and then I'll see an article about one of these games like, oh, there's this really little sweet moment in the game that you could miss it if you don't do this side mission, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now I'm thinking about one because I see a statue that I have. I have, it reminds me of Spider-Man 2, which I really enjoyed it. Great game. But, you know, it's a superhero story. It doesn't have to touch, it's not touching on anything particularly that deep. It's entertaining, though. But there's a side mission in that game where I forget the particulars, but it involves, there's a deaf character in the game. And the mission circles around her and her story and her art that she uses to tell her story. And I think that was really touching in the game. But that's just one mission. You know? There's not much like that in other games. And it's really nice that they put that in the game. But I feel like there could always be more, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, when I think about Journey and I think about the way AAA games are, I don't even think that the, like, issue is that it's about, like, you know, Journey doesn't have killing and it doesn't have violence and AAA games have violence and that's what the problem is. Because, like, I think you can use violence and killing also, like, in a very effective way. And, like, it's okay to have fun games that are shooters. But, like, we could always say something like and obviously this is an indie game, so it's not the best comparison, but like a game I really love in recent memory was Signalis, which is a survival horror game like through and through. It's very much like you're running your way through a haunt, like a basically a haunted place filled with zombie-like creatures, and you got to shoot them and run away from them. But it's like, but there's also a really, really like strong core to the story and the themes and what it's saying. In a way that I feel like sometimes AAA games miss on the like macro scale. And I guess that's the issue, is like micro scale, like you were saying with that Spider-Man 2 moment. There's very clear like moments of developers being like, here, I have this like really compelling story I want to tell. But on the macro level, like things just have to be pretty, it's like they're, it's all pretty smooth. Like it goes, it just washes over you with little, you know, frustration or thought, I guess.
I think that's fair to say. And I think that, you know, back to Journey for a second, you said it's an indie game. Would you say Journey is part of like the boom of indie titles from like the early 2010s?
Yeah, I think I would. With like, there's the obvious caveat, which is like, so that game company had a 3-game deal with Sony, where Sony was like, we will publish 3 games that you make. And this was the last one. So it's like that game company is an indie developer and they made small games that people would like identify as indie, but they were all published by and funded by Sony. So it's like, does that make them not indie? It's one of those like weird gray zones, but I think it was like different enough from the AAA space and like at the same time that games like, you know, Braid and Bastion came out that it's part of that, you know, early indie boom.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the everlasting argument of what makes an indie. It's like, I think, remember last year, the whole Dave the Diver thing?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, that was, it's like kind of like that, right? But on a different level.
Yeah, I mean, it's like indie isn't an aesthetic. So it's like Dave the Diver, pretty much not indie. Like, it's very much not indie, despite being a pixel game, which I think is a lot of the reasons why people call it indie. It's like, I don't love calling Journey an indie game, at least in the fact that it was funded by one of like the biggest game companies, but...
Well, just patently one of the big three, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like pretty much not indie, but there's something about the like artistic intent behind it, and I guess how different it was at the time that does make it feel indie. It's like, oh, it's one of those ones that I'm still... can't figure out my like real answer for. Maybe part of that is just because I love this game so much that I don't want to admit it's a AAA game.
I mean, it's kind of also the question, like, what makes a AAA game a AAA game anymore, you know? Because I mean, well, here's a very recent example of this game looks like a AAA game, it plays like a AAA game, but it's technically an indie. Baldur's Gate 3 is technically an indie game.
Yeah, I know, it's such a weird conversation.
It really is. Like, there's, it feels like you said, indie is more of an idea than, you know, a look. It's not a monolith, right?
Yeah, that's also the thing, is like, no indie game is the same, so it's hard to loop, like, or lump all indie games together.
Yeah, like, Signalis, that's actually an indie game, right?
Yeah, at least I think so.
Then, I mean, some of the best, like when you think about pure indie, Hades, all the games by that studio, which the name escapes me right now.
Supergiant.
Thank you, Supergiant, yes. Yeah. Hades, Transistor, Bastion, Hades 2, and there's another one, I believe, right?
Pyre.
Pyre,
yeah.
Pyre, yes. Like, that is a straight up indie studio, but their quality has improved throughout the years.
Yeah, it's, yeah, there's like, even within indie, there's its own stratifications of like, well, how indie are you?
Yeah, I mean, you could look at something that's released on itch, and that's like probably the most indie, those are the most indie games there are because they're just self-released games, right?
Yeah.
And then you have something like something released under the banner of Devolver Digital. And that's just like Devolver is kind of like an A24 now, right?
Yeah, that is, if we're going to use the film like comparison, that's pretty much how I think about it too. I would have said Annapurna also, but like Annapurna is kind of dead.
Yeah, now, Annapurna is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
They still have a film side, right?
Oh, they still have the film side, yeah.
God, I don't even know what movies they've put out recently.
Me neither.
I couldn't tell you. They used to put out some good stuff, I think. I don't remember. But back to Journey, which is what this is supposed to be about. God. Oh, God. I feel like, would it be fair to say that Sony is coasting a little bit on the image of Journey over the last couple years, because they love to, they obviously they own the rights to it, and I mean, it's not marketed as like a AAA game, but they love reminding people that, hey, we also made Journey. Is that fair to say too?
I mean, yeah, I think they're coasting on their image from 10 years ago for sure. I mean, that's all Astro Bot is coasting on, you know, lost valor from days of old, where people liked much more, they had more compelling more of a compelling
games
about how they made games and released games. Yeah,
I think it's fair to say that Sony's changed their way in the last 10-15 years, right?
Yeah, definitely.
For the worse.
I would call it for the worse for sure.
And the thing is, I don't want to make this like I'm ragging on AAA video games, because I'm definitely not. I am a sicko, and I will say straight up, I play more AAA than indie, but I very much, you know, I see the problems with AAA, and I see the allure of indies, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, because I'm like such a flip of most people, where it's like, even though I'm like in the industry and I have to play so many AAA games for work, I am like 70% of my gaming is indie.
I think that's interesting, and I think there's nothing wrong with that, because there are so many games now, you don't have to play only AAA.
Yeah.
You just don't. It's funny, because my girlfriend, I'd say she's kind of like you in a way. So her main platform is the Switch, but she has a love for indie games and some of the Nintendo AAA side, but like, that's a whole different thing, I think.
Yeah.
Even though it's still AAA, Nintendo is kind of its own category. I think that's kind of fair to say.
I would agree, yeah.
Yeah, but she has put in a lot of time on the latest Zelda game. Wisdom, I forget the name of it.
Oh, Echoes of Wisdom, yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun. She likes it a lot. But she also just got Balatro for Switch, and I have not seen her play anything else but Balatro for 2 weeks, I think. It's just been that. Or maybe even a month now.
That's how everybody who plays Balatro seems to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's on iOS now, and I cannot install that on my phone. I can't do it. Because
yeah,
I
refuse to, because I'm worried I'll like absolutely fall into the rabbit hole.
I have it for PC. I played on Steam Deck, and I had to stop playing because I got too into it. And I was warning her when it came in. I was like, listen, when that game comes in, it's over. That's all you're going to be doing for a while. And she's like, yeah, I guess. And then I tell her, you know? God.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. The game of the year is probably an indie game.
I mean, yes. The game of the year for everybody is probably 1,000 times Resist.
That one, too. That's it's funny, because this year is a very... It's... AAA is doing interestingly this year. I don't want to say good, but, you know, it's not... It's hard to talk about AAA, especially this year with all the layoffs and everything surrounding the AAA studios. But there have been good games on the AAA side.
Yeah, it's been a great year for RPGs, especially.
Yeah, my game of the year, besides Balatro, is a game that no one's going to be talking about, even though it's an Ubisoft game. The latest Prince of Persia game, Lost Crown?
Legacy?
I forget what it's called. I am so bad with names, as you can see. But that game is...
From January. Damn.
Yeah, that game is incredible. It's one of the best Metroidvanias I've played in years, and no one's going to be talking about it because they just disbanded the team.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic.
It really is.
Definitely a game that people should not forget about.
Yeah. And to think, all this indie talk came from talking about Journey, which we have to talk about more.
I don't know. I mean, Journey itself is a weird thing, even more on the indie thing, because I feel like Journey is very close in relationship to like two other iconic PlayStation games that sort of straddle the line between indie and AAA, which is Journey reminds me a lot of Studio Japan's Ico and Shadow of the Colossus in ways. I think there's so much, Ico and Journey especially, I think are like essentially siblings in some way.
From what I see, I played a little bit of Shadow of the Colossus. I played the original and I played the remake. And again, the little bit I played of Journey, there's definitely something very similar there in, like, at least the isolation, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, isolation, like the atmosphere. I think something that the thing that I find interesting is like Journey almost feels like the team at that game company like looked at Eco and was like, you know, what would be the natural evolution of this? Because like Eco is a game also about connection in the face of isolation, because it's about like, you know, Yorta and Eco, you know, joining together in order to like progress through their journey, and like escape. And it does a really good job of being like, wow, a player can connect to a, you know, NPC, and the NPC can seem to have their own like wants and desires, and you know, their kind of own thing going on outside of you. And then Journey was like, yeah, let's do that again, but this time it actually will just be other players, but it's still going to be about connection in the face of isolation. Which is just so interesting to me. I think like Eco and Journey, Eco especially, is a game that's so wild because it's so incredibly influential. Like game developers will talk about how it's probably the most influential game of the like 21st century, because it's like, oh, you know, Dark Souls was inspired in some way by Eco, or just like tons of developers, like The Last of Us is inspired by Eco. You can't talk about a big game without Eco coming up. But I think so many of those games have like learned or taken the wrong thing from Eco. There's like a lot of atmosphere and a lot of sometimes like using NPCs, but they kind of forget about the like connection element. And Journey was like, no, that is the most important thing. Like connection is the most important part of Eco. And then again, like with Journey, people have kind of just like not taken that lesson, and they haven't focused on the idea of like connection.
I mean, isn't the entire, like you said, the entire thing about Eco is the connection, because you're literally tethered to the supporting character, right? You have to like hold her hand to get through obstacles, right?
I was actually really lucky enough to interview Jinova Chan, the director of Journey, once, and something he said that was like so fascinating is he was like, you know, Eco, he was basically talking about Eco being such an influential game, and he's like, I often think about what would have happened if the industry would have learned from Eco that what games need is a button that lets you hold hands. Which I think
That's beautiful.
it's such a weird, simple, silly statement on its like on face value, but it's like so compelling to me, honestly, because I'm like, damn, you're so right. Maybe all we have to do is hold hands in video games.
Sometimes hand holding is all you need. Like in life, you know?
Yeah, it's like actually kind of really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's just wild to me that like in the wide like breadth of what has been lost.
Could you repeat that? I think you broke up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. It's so interesting to me that like in the wide breadth of what video games are, that's still kind of been lost.
Like the connection aspect.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because, you know, a big game from the last couple of years has been like Death Stranding, and that was kind of one of the whole like the ethos of the game is like forging connections, right?
My God, you're so right. I completely forgot about Death Stranding.
It's another game that I've only played a few minutes of.
Another great game though, that yeah, definitely is like in this lineage though that I'm kind of like piecing together.
I really need to play that one. I have it for PlayStation. I have to just play it. You know, there might be too many games.
There are too many games, I'll say it.
There's too many, and the worst part is it's just not going to get better. There's going to be more.
Yeah.
Too many games. not enough time. Oh, God.
The eternal
okay. Battle. Yeah. And all the time I have is just going to be used playing Balatro, probably.
There are worse ways time could be spent with video games.
Yeah, you could play, I don't know, throw a dart, pick a bad game. You could play that game. Or a lesser game. I don't know. There's too many of them.
Yeah.
God. All right. Willa, I have to end it here because we could talk about... This conversation has gone from just Journey to, like, gaming as a whole. And I'm worried that we could keep talking about gaming as a whole all day. Most but you don't likely. Have... Yes. We don't have the time for that, though, unfortunately. This is not unlimited time. But if people would like to find your work, where can they find you on the social medias?
People can find me on socials. I'm still on Twitter. I am also on Blue Sky. Username is at the Willa Rowe. That's spelled as my name is, WILLARoWE. And you can find my work. I have a personal blog. The links are on all my socials. And you can listen to my podcast, the Girl Mode Podcast, which we have new episodes that come out every Wednesday. But yeah.
I will link all of this in the description. I promise that. But for now, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Mom, We Can't Pause. Thank you again, Willa Rowe, for coming onto the show. And I will catch you guys on the next episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take it easy.
Thanks. Peace.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.